Hello, everyone, and welcome to Asking Styles, because who you are matters. I'm delighted you are here joining me today. I am Brian Saber, president of Asking Matters, and I've been in this business now 37 years. I was a frontline asker for 25 of those. Never thought I'd be an asker, I ended up doing it well. And so here I am today. Before I say anything more, I'd love to know where you're listening in from today and what your position is with your organization. Are you a development person, an ED, a board member, a consultant? How are you involved in the nonprofit world, and what brings you and your interest here today? And where are you from? I'll say I am now in Jersey City, New Jersey, looking at the Empire State Building as we speak. So I'm speaking to you, I'm coming to you from there today. So I spent 25 years doing this asking, and it's important to understand as you're typing that questions box, that this slide is as much me as the one you saw just before. I am no more the stereotype of a fundraiser and asker than most of us are. I'm not doing it because I love asking, because there's nothing I like more than sitting down in front of someone and asking them for money. I love the idea of them giving money. I love my organizations, but I'm doing this work, as I think many of us are, because we care. It's the same reason our board members are. And let's see, I've got a board member. Oh, Nancy. Hello, Nancy. A friend of mine is on today. She's a board member. We've got EDs like Lisa from New Orleans and Sarah, president of a board, and a special shout out to people like Sarah and Nancy, board members who've joined us to try and learn more. You know, often board members in particular say, gee, well, I'm not like the fundraiser, our director of development. I don't know how to fundraise. And how many board members say, I'll do anything but fundraise? And all of that's because of these bad stereotypes of what it is. This idea that we're trying to corner people into making a gift, that we have to do this terrible transactional work. And none of that is good fundraising. None of that is what this is about. We're talking about developing relationships that lead to giving gifts over a long period of time. We're not talking direct mail. We're not talking special events, except maybe the larger gifts that we cultivate so people will be sponsors. We are talking about the relationships we make with grantors, with funders, right? Because there is a person and a relationship. And it's so much more about the relationship, meaning it's so much more about who we are than it is being that person who in that moment can ask in some unbelievable way to get the biggest gift. I promise that's not me. And that's not why I was successful all these years. And I think that rings true for most of us. It's been great. So many of you have typed in Jeff from Seattle is a board member. We've got Eric, an artistic director, philanthropy officer, Mary. Thank you all. There are hundreds of you on today, so I can't read this all out. One question is, did you grow up thinking you wanted to be a fundraiser? If anyone did, type that in. I think I've only met a few people in my life, and that's only been the case because their parent was in the business, and so they got the bug from their parents or something. But most of us wanted to make a difference, and maybe we cared about education, but we weren't teachers, or we cared about a medical cause, but we weren't scientists or doctors or nurses or whatever it is. And this is the way we figured out how to do it. So today is about the asking styles, because once I stopped fundraising full time, my goal was to try and find a way to help people feel more comfortable doing this work and understanding their strength in a relationship. So we're going to talk about the asking styles, and then I'm going to give you a couple of examples of how we can apply them to many aspects of our work, selecting prospects, or at least understanding ourselves in relation to our prospects through our asking style, how to make the case, set up the meeting, have intentional conversations, a little bit on boards and asking styles, because I do a ton of work on boards now, from board trainings and assessments and such. And this whole dynamic of the board as seen through the asking styles is important. And we'll take questions at the end and recap. But I will take questions all along. Now, as I said, there are tons of you. Kyle, my right-hand man, he will be watching the questions box along with me. And if there is a question, we'll try to take it while we go along. If not, at the end, I'm happy to run a little bit later, too, if there are a bunch of questions. By the way, you will get a PDF of the slides by tomorrow with a link to the recording, so you can share that around with everyone. It was a free webinar. You might want to share it with your whole board. So you don't have to take notes necessarily on what you see here. Let's go into the asking styles. So the asking styles came about because we realized, and the we was Andrea Kielstedt and myself. You may know Andrea from Capital Campaign Toolkit with Amy Eisenstein, or from her capital campaign work over many years. She and I became friends and peers, and we looked around and we were really looking at boards first. How do we get boards to feel more comfortable? And we said, well, we've got to help people understand that there are many ways to do this work. This work being the developing relationships, what I would call the major gift work. Right? There are many ways to be effective, many ways to ask. Well, so what are the two characteristics that might most impact our asking style? The first seems like the really obvious one. How do you interact with people? Extrovert versus introvert. Now, of course, the challenge here is the stereotype. So people think, when they think extrovert, I think for my generation, if you're, I just turned 60, John Candy from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Maybe Michael Scott from The Office. Maybe you can type in your favorite character from TV or film who you think of as an extrovert when you think extrovert. What's an example you would give? Type that in the questions box. And then for introverts, we think of someone like Shrek, someone hermetically sealed who never goes out. Well, neither of those is the case for 99% of us. The difference has to do with where we derive our energy, whether we're deriving it from others or ourselves. And that has to do with this dichotomy between whether we talk to think or think to talk. So let me explain that a bit. Extroverts are very quick on their feet, so, and confident in their thoughts as they're coming through. So as they're thinking, they're talking. The natural tendency of an introvert is to stop and think and then talk when the idea is more firmly formed. But if you're in a conversation going back and forth, there's a certain rhythm to it. And often that causes an introvert to speed up the thought process to talk sooner. So that takes energy. Spoiler alert, I'm an introvert. I enjoy being with people. I really do. But I always need to regroup and I need time by myself, because it does take a lot of energy to keep up in the rhythm of the conversation, especially if it's a larger group, which I often avoid because that takes way too much of my energy. So let's see. Oh, Amy, so we're talking about extroverts. Cindy says Michael Scott for sure. Amy says Oprah. You can let me know if you think of any others. So this how, whether we think to talk or talk to think, is going to impact how comfortable we are meeting people under more slight, maybe awkward situations and so forth. The second is, how do you take in information? Are you analytic or intuitive? Much more straightforward. Do you start with the data and derive an idea? Where do you start with the idea and then you see if the data supports it? This is going to impact why you love your cause, what brought you to this cause in the first place, and how you're going to talk about it to others. And we're going to talk about case for support, because this impacts your case and what it is you say as much as anything in fundraising. When we put them together, we get the four asking styles: rainmaker, go-getter, kindred spirit, and mission controller. So I'm going to talk about each of these, and then I'm going to put a poll up on the screen to see what the range of styles is today. Keep in mind, no one has just the attributes in one style. We all have a little bit of everything, but generally we fit in one of these quadrants or another. So we start with the rainmaker. When people think fundraiser, they think rainmaker. The analytic extrovert. Very objective, focused, goal-oriented, driven to succeed. I want to come out on top. I'm going to close 10 gifts. I'm going to raise $50,000 this year. Really keeps their eye on the prize. Great skills for fundraising. Then we've got our go-getter, our intuitive extrovert, life of the party, big picture thinker, lots of energy, gets everyone to join through their enthusiasm, makes friends easily, creative, quick on their feet. Great skills, again, as we're trying to engage people and bring them in. Different than the core skills of a rainmaker. Then we've got our kindred spirits. I'm a classic kindred spirit. I am an intuitive introvert. I am feelings oriented. Probably to, I shouldn't say this, a fault, but everything for me is personal. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I've tried to change, but it's just who I am. And because I tend to be so sensitive, I tend to be sensitive to others. I want to make sure people are heard, seen, that they're attended to, that they know I care. I'm going to go out of my way for them. I might put them ahead of me. Great skills, again, when we're trying to cultivate donors, make them feel important at our organization. Not to say a rainmaker can't be caring and a kindred spirit can't be goal-oriented, but we all have our strengths and comforts. And then we've got our mission controller, the Eagle Scout, the analytic introvert, keeps their eye on the prize, is methodical, systematic, and very observant. Now, we know listening is an important skill in fundraising. We need to listen and learn from our donors and about our donors. And mission controllers are great at sitting back, observing, and listening. Now, there's another way we look at the Asking Solutions through the core question each of us asks when we're trying to figure out what's most important to us. What's going to drive us? Not surprisingly, the rainmaker says, well, what's the goal? It's something in the future, and it's got to be quantitative so I know I've succeeded when I get there. How many gifts? How many dollars? How much time I'm going to spend? Whatever those metrics are. Now, the go-getter is also looking in the future, but more broadly, gee, what's the opportunity? What can we make happen here? The kindred spirit is saying, well, what moves my heart? What? I'm going to go in the direction of what my heart tells me to do. And the mission controller is going to say, guys, all well and good, but what's the plan? Without a plan, chances are you're not going to reach your goal. Chances are you can't take advantage of that opportunity fully. And it really doesn't matter what your heart says if it's not doable. Then you can start to see where we really need everyone together on this. So here are the four, and now I'm going to launch a poll. So wait till you see that on the screen. There you are. But, oh, not yet. Launch poll. Did that launch? There we go. What do we have? Do you think you're a rainmaker, the analytic extrovert, go-getter, intuitive extrovert, kindred spirit, intuitive introvert, mission controller, analytic introvert? Let's see. We've got more than half of you already. I'm going to give you a few more seconds. Let's see if we got any other examples. Ah, Cosette has a very good question. Can we be two? I'm actually, I'd be touching on that in a second, but let me say that yes, and they would be adjacent. And I'm going to share with you in a minute a more scientific way to find your asking style, and I'll tell you what the results can be from that. Okay, we've got more than three quarters of you. I'm going to close the poll and share the results. Let's see. There we go. So only 14% self-identified as rainmakers, 20% go-getters, 29% my fellow kindred spirits, and 37% mission controller. So if the analytic extrovert is supposed to be the classic, the fundraiser, you can see where most of us don't fit in there, 86% of us. Half of you self-identify as intuitive, and 57, two-thirds percent of you identify as introvert. So let's keep that in mind. Here's an example of how we might use our asking style. And again, I'm going to come back to this idea of two in a second. But now think of who we might partner with and how that how we might choose someone based on those partnerships, or at least figure out what our strengths and challenges are, because no one has it all. So we often, I've been in all these different situations. I've been a director of development asking with an executive director or with the board person. I've been an executive director asking with my development officer or my chair. I've been a development person asking with another development person or a program person or something. There are lots of different permutations. Sometimes it's a matter of who's available, right? And most of us are in small shops. We don't have a lot of choice. So, but I'm a big believer in partnering because I think it really helps create this synergy, and it creates two relationships between the donor and the organization, which I think strengthens them. And it's interesting, we just did partnering in our membership recently. We were talking about all the different ways to strengthen the relationship between donors and the organization. I do a lot of work on partnering. So,
hey Brian.
Yes, hi.
Can you put the poll results down?
Oh, yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry there. So partnering, your ideal partner, all things considered, is someone diagonally across from you. Knowing some of you who are on, I think some of you have read my first book where I talk about Ron, my buddy from Chicago, and I think there are a couple of you from Chicago here. He was the head of Northwestern Settlement House for 30 years. We were in 1,000 meetings together over 5 campaigns and other fundraising. He's a go-getter. And I used to say, well, Ron, it would be perfect if you were a rainmaker. I appreciate your bringing the extrovert to the table, but we're both intuitive. And we did really well as intuitives, and we were ourselves, and we're going to talk about Case. But boy, if he were the rainmaker, he would have brought some of that analytic side naturally, which might have helped with analytic donors. So to keep this in mind, and this is not an exercise for today, but this is a great exercise for you back in your office or with your board, to have everyone take the assessment, the quiz, we now call it a quiz actually, and then figure out how do we work together? What does it mean if we're both go-getters? What does it mean if we're go-getters and we're gonna go see a mission controller? What does it mean if I'm a kindred spirit and you're a rainmaker? How do we work together? Very powerful and sort of simple way to figure out how to work together better. Now back to Cosette's question, there is a 30 question true-false quiz at either askingmaris.com or quiz.askingmaris.com. You can take it on any electronic device. It takes only 2 to 3 minutes to answer the true-false questions. And then you will get a primary and a secondary result. So my primary is kindred spirit and my secondary mission controller, which says that my introverted side is more dominant, but I have a little bit more of a balance between intuitive and analytic, which is true. Even though I'm very feelings oriented, I'm a numbers guy. I like numbers puzzles. I have an economics degree. I was a math whiz. I definitely have this piece, and I end up being the planner. And I joke that because I'm a kindred spirit, I really want things to get done. And if no one else will do them, I do them because I feel bad and because I can do them. So those are my styles. So you might be, and you need to be two that are adjacent. And if they're these, then it would say your analytic predominates, if it were rainmaker and go-getter, extroversion, and so forth. And once you, when you take the quiz, you'll get a result on the screen and in your email. So the first thing I recommend, of course, and free, available to everyone, is for everyone in your shop to take that. That alone will be a powerful tool. And Cindy said, I'm having an Oprah aha moment, kindred spirit for sure, with second being go-getter. That makes sense as to why some of us have not felt the typical fundraiser, but a great success. Great. I'm glad you're feeling that. Bo said, thank you for putting that down. Can you put the poll down? I apologize that you missed it. One picture that just talked about the different sets of styles. Take away from this the number one thing: everyone is as effective as someone as the next person, because we all can build relationships, right? Unless you're a misanthrope and you can't form relationships, you can be a good fundraiser, and virtually no one's a misanthrope. right? And if we're forming good relationships in life, we can form them as fundraisers. And this work is about relationship. Let me ask a question. What is the longest number of consecutive years you have made a charitable gift to one organization? What's the longest consecutive number of years you've done that? I will share, I graduated from college in 1984. We're now in 2022. So unless something happened and I missed one, I've made a gift 38 years in a row. I've been $25 at the beginning. It's gone up and gone down with my finances, but I've made that gift every year. Nancy, 40, excellent. Marcia, 21 years to her own organization, which is fantastic. Twyla, 22. Sarah, 6. 21 for Angela. We are the most loyal donors. I semi-joke, okay, foundations, big gifts sometimes, but how many foundations say, 3 years on and 1 year off, we don't want you to be dependent on us, or we'll only fund a new program, or we'll only fund you if you're doing well on board diversity, or you're doing well on this, or your overhead is under this. How about corporations? Well, okay, I'm Mobil, we're giving $50 million. We're Exxon, we're giving 50. Well, we're gonna merge. We're gonna take a year off to contemplate our navel and decide what our philanthropy would be. And when we come back, we're gonna give 75. 50 plus 50 is 75. How many mergers have there been, and where? Sort of left in the dust. And I'm not saying we shouldn't go for these gifts, but you take them when you can, right? We individuals, and I'm seeing again, 28 years from Cindy, Chloe says 2, but I'm only 25. Keep going, Chloe, that's a great start. It was only 2 for me, or 3 when I was 25. We're very loyal. So what we wanna do in fundraising is build relationships for an annuity of gifts over time. And actually, though it's a different webinar, we could talk about the impact, because in fact, those are the gifts that keep on giving. Over time, major and planned gifts are the least expensive gifts. So, and those are all dependent on relationship. So let's talk about a couple of these steps here, and I may give a best practice as well. So selecting prospects. Well, we have the ABCs, which were developed by Kim Klein of Grassroots Fundraising. First of all, someone has to have the ability to give a gift of a certain level to be a prospect for this type of work, right? We're not going to go see everyone who gives $100. So you have to figure out what your threshold is, $1,000, $2,500, $10,000. What's a major gift? The second is belief. Do they believe in what you're doing? And is it one of the areas they want to support? Because even the richest philanthropists don't give everywhere. And how about a shout out for Mackenzie Scott, who gave away another $85 million yesterday to the Girl Scouts. I mean, she's doing such fantastic work, giving these massive amounts to social service. It really brightens my day. But even Mackenzie Scott is not giving to everything, right? She's chosen, which I'm happy about, social service, equity, women, and such. She's not giving to medical. She's not giving to environment necessarily. Right? So you got to have belief. And the third is contact. And I put that one up here for the board members, because board members trying to help will say, well, you should solicit so-and-so or so-and-so. Everyone tells me to solicit Mike Bloomberg. And I say, do you know Mike Bloomberg? I don't know Mike Bloomberg. If neither of us knows him, he is not a prospect. He's what I call a suspect. And I don't spend much time. So ABCs. We start with ABCs. But then we look on top of that at our asking style, particularly important for board members. And we've got a bunch of you on today, a bunch of EDs, directors of development working with board members, because every prospect is not going to be equally comfortable for board members to solicit. So when I'm thinking of board members, if I'm thinking of rainmakers, and I think if you're helping with our prospects, top dollar prospects, because rainmakers are driven by the big gift. If I give a rainmaker, or if I'm a rainmaker and I have a small prospect who's not gonna make a big gift, it's just less motivating. Also, rainmakers are great with new contacts because you're objective and extroverted. So if you go try and open the door to someone who's given modestly, who could give more, hasn't given before, and the person says no, you're okay with that. You just go on to the next person. Go-getters also great with new prospects because you love meeting new people and you're comfortable with it and you love getting to know them. You're also good with your friends. So sometimes I say rainmakers will look at their world very strategically. Go-getters blanket their world. Everyone's going to love what I'm doing. Kindred spirits, I say stay away from the from your closest friends because that's too personal. But go, if you're starting out, go for those who are likely to give. If you're working with your board and you've got a kindred spirit board member, ask that board member to solicit another board member or someone who's given many years in a row, or to cultivate that person. It's not always about solicitation with board members. Again, another webinar. But for kindred spirits, we want to help them get their sea legs if they're new to fundraising, because the negotiation and the navigation are harder because kindred spirits take things personally. And then you've got your mission controllers, and mission controllers will be fine with their friends as well, though unlike the go-getters who will just blanket ask because everyone's going to love this, the mission controllers will sort of methodically go through their friends more systematically. And I also say that mission controllers are great with technical cases. So if you're going to a foundation and there's going to be there's a proposal, there are guidelines, there are reports, deadlines, or an individual person's foundation, or you're involving someone in planned giving, right? You're trying to get a legacy gift from someone. Sometimes having a mission controller, whether it's you or a board member, whoever, those technical cases are easier for a mission controller to understand and explain because they're into systems. But I often think the biggest piece here is this idea of intuitives versus analytics. All things equal, if you can solicit a fellow intuitive or analytic, you're speaking more of the same language, which is what we're going to get to in the next case. Because it's important for us to have our own story. I don't believe that we should have an elevator pitch and that everyone needs to say the same thing. And here's where the asking styles really shine. So I believe that your story is a compelling set of ideas that moves the teller and the listener. And I actually think the most important person here is you, the teller. It might surprise you because people often are told what we need, or think we need to tell the donor what the donor wants to hear. Okay, I'm not sure what the donor wants to hear until I get to know the donor. But I know the donor wants to feel that I'm passionate about my organization and that I'm being authentic. If I'm giving the old elevator pitch and saying the same thing everyone else is, this is especially true for your boards, it's going to sound like it's canned. It's hard to make it come from the heart because it's not exactly your story, their story. I believe that any representative of your organization, if they're telling a passionate, authentic story, will be compelling to the listener, the donor. The donor is going to ask questions, and then you're going to fill in the blank, and you're going to ask questions. But what you yourself say to excite someone about the organization when you first meet them, when you're cultivating them, when you're communicating with them anyway, that's got to be your story. It's got to be passionate and authentic to who you are. So there are two best practices. First, vision versus impact. That we can talk about an organization as, we can talk about need, but need is very short term. And need is putting a Band-Aid on something. So we want to try and talk in a visionary way about the future and the impact we can make. We tend to talk about what we do, how much of it we do, but the question is, what's the impact that that is having? Okay, we have 4 wet labs. What's the benefit of having multiple wet labs, and what's the impact that has? And what's our vision for the future if the work in those labs goes well? So vision and impact, best practices. But remember, we each asked this different question. So the rainmaker is going to use a different vocabulary from the go-getter, the kindred spirit, and the mission controller. I, the kindred spirit, am no more going to use facts and figures and goals and strategies than the rainmaker will be comfortable telling a personal, warm story about their own involvement or a participant's involvement. The go-getter often has the easiest time here. Look, talking in big picture visionary terms, it's a strength of go-getters, it's easier for them. Mission controllers can get into the details, which can be tough, but it's okay if the mission controller says this is the plan, which helps us have an impact and fulfill this vision. As long as it's part of a story that includes vision and impact, talking about plans and systems is fine. We're all going to tell stories, but different stories. Goal stories, opportunity stories, heart stories, and plan stories, as I call them. I often think this is the most important point in all the fundraising is your story, because that's what's going to help build the relationship the most between you and the donor. So remember, what's the opportunity? What's the goal? This is what's going to drive us. So now let's set up meetings. Forever, people said, you have to call. There's still people who believe best practice, even just to set up a meeting, is to call to set up the meeting and say, okay, can we meet? I have always disliked the phone as an introvert. I don't spend much time on the phone with friends. And obviously, the world has changed dramatically. We now have to call cell phones. People don't have a home phone often. Business is very transient in many ways. But I also think we have to keep in mind that half of our donors are introverts. So who said the donor wants us to call? I don't like getting calls either. I love email. So I think it's important to embrace that. If you know once I know a donor well, if I have a donor who really wants me to call for anything, I can call. I've got the relationship then and I call. But all things equal, I encourage people in our field to use the method that's most comfortable for them. Do what's most comfortable for you because you're more likely to do the work. Certainly your board members are more likely to do the work if they can do it in a way that's comfortable for them. And you'll do it better. Go-getters always want to call. Mission controllers would always write to make sure things are detailed and systematic. I like email because I find it awkward on the phone and I have that detail side. Rainmakers have the easiest time because they're objective, saying, okay, whatever works, I'll do. I should send an email. Call, I'll call. So here you could say the rainmaker has a strength in being most flexible that way. But we do what we do. My buddy Ron, when we'd have our campaigns, I would, and of course I was supporting his work, I'd have a list. I'd sit on one side of his desk and I'd say, okay, Ron, it's time to call Kathy and Mike, and their number is 973, blah, blah, blah. And he would just pick up the phone and call them. And he was comfortable whatever happened on that call. If someone said, oh, I'm too busy to talk now, plunk, can you call me back? I'm rushed. If the response was not exactly what Ron was looking for, he could massage that in the moment. I always found that more difficult. So we never would have switched roles, that's for sure. Let's see, any questions? I'm not sure I've seen any yet. If you do have them, please type them in. So now we've spent a good deal of time talking about our asking style and what we might be leading up to a meeting in terms of figuring out who to ask, figuring out what our case is, how are we going to reach out. So now it's time to have an intentional conversation. To help with this, my former asking partner, I bought Andrea out years ago, but she developed something we use at Asking Matters called the Arc of the Ask. And it's even though it was designed for solicitations, it actually fits any conversation we're going to have with donors, whether we're having the conversation in person, by video chat, or by phone call. And not every piece is always exactly in this order, and we can't go through the whole arc today, though in Asking Matters and webinars and all sorts of things, we dive deep into this. But I want to point out a few places in these intentional conversations where our asking styles impact us. We start these conversations by settling. We've come together. Let's say we're meeting at a restaurant. We've come from somewhere else. We're on our phones till we sit down. We're on a video chat. We're just shutting down all the other screens, right? The phone calls. We have to, we're in the same place somewhat physically, and now we have to get in the same place emotionally. And it's a great place to ask all sorts of personal questions. How are you doing? How was your weekend? How's your new job? Whatever. I find that that extroverts have a bit of an edge here because it's easier for extroverts to just jump into a new conversation. If you're like me as an introvert, when I get in somewhere, into a space, into a conversation, it takes me just a bit of time to set myself into it and feel comfortable, get a sense of my surroundings. So one of the benefits of going with Ron, the go-getter on all those meetings, was that Ron could settle us in before he was more comfortable at the beginning. And I, to help myself, would write out some questions in advance. So I had the muscle memory of having written them out. It was easier for me to start the conversation. Once it was going, I was good, but I needed a bit of a jump start. So that's the first piece. We confirm why we're here. We explore. We learn about each other. I wish I could go into all of that, but that is for another training. And then it comes this point, which can be hard. Well, we're having this nice chat. Now we have to turn the conversation to telling our story and making an ask. Right, so we're each going to use our vocabulary to tell this story, and we're each going to have a challenge at this moment. Rainmakers, not so big on process, you like to get to the point, you might have to pull back and let the conversation evolve some more. Go-getters, why ruin the party? We're having such a good time. And that's if you're even aware that it's time to move on. I love go-getters because you're always in the moment, but I often had to kick Ron under the table or give him my googly eyes so he knew it was time to move on because he could chat a lot. Kindred spirits, we might push the can down the road. We kick the can. We might say, oh, how long can I put off turning the conversation to the ask? And the mission control is going to say, well, I saw the arc of the ask, and we're 30 minutes into a 60-minute meeting, so it's chop, chop, it's time for me to ask. Mission control, you might need to be more flexible. So I wonder if any of that resonates with you. And then we get to another part of the conversation that's hard. So we've made our ask. Would you sit on our benefit committee? Would you contribute $10,000? Would you open the door to someone else? Would you come to our studio and watch the new dance in progress, whatever it is? And we have to wait for a response, which means we need to be quiet. Who do you think is going to have the hardest time being quiet after of the askers? Which asker is going to have the hardest time being quiet after asking for something? Type that in the questions box. Let's see. I'm seeing a bunch of go-getters. One rainmaker. Amy says rainmaker. Eric and Patrice rainmaker. I'm seeing lots of extroverts, rainmakers, go-getters, Rebecca, kindred spirit. Sometimes I wonder whether you're giving the style that you are, because it is actually hard for many of us. Go-getters, now I see a mission controller, E. Brown, more go-getters coming through. So I don't have scientific information on this, but this is what I've seen. Remember, I've been eating, drinking, sleeping, breathing these asking styles forever. I think it will be a little challenging for the rainmaker who might want to add more facts, but who's very strategic and will say, no, I know the strategic thing is not to talk. I think it will be hardest for the go-getter. I've seen that. Doesn't like the silence and has a tendency to go on. Easier for the kindred spirit. Whew, I'm glad I got that over, but can be anxious and might feel the space with words, and easiest for the mission controller, who knows this is the plan, can follow the plan, and is also happy sitting back and observing. So that's what I've seen. I don't have a picture of it here, but my number one prop in fundraising is a glass of water. Would you consider a gift of $10,000 for our capital campaign? In the 5 seconds it takes to lift up a glass, take a sip, put it down, many donors will respond. Someone taught me that. It's not my idea, but I have used it for all these years, and it's been very helpful in forcing me to stop talking after I ask for something. So last piece is the board. And I'm so glad we have a bunch of board members on today. And I know we're coming close to the end. I might go over a few minutes past 1:45 Eastern. But I encourage you to have your whole board take the quiz. Whenever I train a board, and I've trained many, I ask everyone to take this in advance so I can map it out and get a sense of the board. And this is so important for board dynamics and leadership and structure. So you can see on the screen, you know, one layout, and you'll see I have primary and secondary. So top right, you've got Alice and George, who are both go-getter rainmaker, go-getter primarily then rainmaker. I put them both on so we can see primary and secondary. So here we look pretty balanced. We seem to have a few more intuitives, maybe one or two more introverts. Now, what happens if Alice and George aren't go-getter rainmakers, but they're actually, and I'm sorry, I didn't change GG to RR, that's a mistake, if they're mission controller rainmakers, right? Now we look at it and say, wow, we've got a lot more introverts. We only have Jill and Angela up there on the go-getter side. So that means something for the balance of our board and how we might work together. So, and I apologize, I think, wait, do I have an extra slide here? So, oh no, I apologize. So this impacts board meetings, whether they're in person or by video chat. Apologies on that. So now we've had all these video chat meetings, and those are even harder for introverts. And you have to work even harder if you're still doing a lot of virtual meetings to make sure that introverts are going to talk, because the extroverts are more likely to jump in when they have something to say, whereas the introverts want to stop and think about it and won't want to cut someone else off necessarily. And that has become really more challenging with videos, with virtual meetings, because it's harder to get a sense of who wants to talk next when you're all on this little screen. When you're in a room, you can sort of sense the body language. The board chair can see from the body language who might want to talk next. So really incumbent upon the board chair to understand the asking styles of all the board members and make sure that everyone's voice is being heard, if nothing else. And we could talk also about strategic planning and such. But that, again, would there's so much we can do here. But you can imagine how important it is to have a mix of the styles on any planning committee. If you're doing some strategic planning, you want someone who's goal-oriented, someone who's got vision, someone who never forgets the participants, and someone who's good at planning and making sure it's going to happen. So here's another exercise for you to take, and that is for your ED and board chair to talk about their asking styles and how they work together to be able to honor each other, respect each other better, understand more where someone's coming from. You can imagine you have a mission controller, board member, and a go-getter executive director, and the board member is always saying, how are you going to make that happen? Okay, but how is that going to happen? It's a great idea, but what's going to happen? Or you flip it around, right? And the go-getter board member saying, I want to do something big. And the executive director is saying, okay, but we have to make sure our ducks are in a row. We can't just do this. So a very important exercise. So what are your next steps coming out of this? And if you have questions, type them in. Type them in the questions box now as I wrap up with next steps, but I will stay on to answer questions if you have them. So the first step is to take the quiz. Absolutely, that's the first one. I hope you'll all, some of you may be taking it right now while you're on. If not, as soon as you hang up, go take the quiz. Truly, it takes 2 minutes. Share your results, get everyone else to do it. And then I've got two great offers for everyone who signed up for today's webinar. The first is that I've made these 35-minute or so recorded trainings on each style. You get to see my mug, slides, they come with worksheets, and they go through everything I did today in much more detail and really will help you or your team members understand their style completely. And they're normally $39, and I'm offering $10 off today through Friday afternoon, and you'll get information about that tomorrow morning in the mail, so watch out for it. You'll be getting an email tomorrow morning. And the second is that I've got 3 books I've written, and I offer them as a package directly through me if you want. The first is the Asking Styles book, the one in the middle, which is the primer on the Asking Styles and goes through them in detail. The second, on the left, Boards and Asking Styles, helps you see exactly how to work your board and how your board does work through the styles. How do you build camaraderie? How do you assign things? What's the dynamic of your board depending on the asking style of your board chair? How do you recruit? How do you onboard? How do you train? All these things through the lens of the styles. And the third, Engage Boards Will Fundraise, my newest book, is all about the tight relationship between governance and fundraising. How important it is to engage your board members correctly, send the right messages, communicate correctly if you want them to fundraise. Because I know for almost everyone on today, you're with a smaller mid-sized organization, and it's really important that your board be part of that practice. Your board's only going to do that work if they're really engaged in the organization itself and at the right level. So I offer them all for $60, which is, I think, 25% off, free shipping. I've got this great door hanger I send out that says, please do not disturb, I'm making fundraising calls, and I'll inscribe them all for you as well. So those are the two deals we've got going. And are there any questions? Well, Suzanne said she joined late. Will we get a video to watch? Yes, you will get a link to a video and a PDF of the slides tomorrow morning, along with a reminder of these two offers. So I'd love you to type in as we go, even though we're 4 minutes late. What is your top takeaway from today? Please share that with me. What's your top takeaway from today? What's your top? Thank you, Lisa. I thank all of you who are typing in to say how helpful this was. I really do hope it was. I'm passionate about our field and helping it however I can. How do you get buy-in from the board who's skeptical of this kind of information? You know, there's got to be an advocate there, Diana, someone who, if there isn't anyone on the board who believes in this type of information, and that can lead to them being great ambassadors and such, it's very hard. By the way, I don't believe every board member should ask for money. I believe every board member should cultivate, educate, involve, thank, recognize, ask for in-kind, maybe everything but ask for money. And I find sometimes if I put it that way, I can get everyone to the table. Lisa says she and her board chair are a great match now. She knows why. A number of you, you're going to take the quiz, which I love. Work your style, make friends with other styles. Thank you. These are great. Thank you so much for typing these all in. I can't read them all out, but I am delighted you all joined me today. It's a lot easier to teach this stuff than do it. I do a little fundraising now, but mostly teaching, so I really admire all of you. I know how hard it is to do this work and all the other work you have, but I appreciate it. I appreciate you being part of the nonprofit world. Without us, there is no nonprofit world. Without us going out there and raising the money as staff and board and other volunteers, our organizations don't have the money to do their great work. So we really are impacting the world, and I appreciate it. Have a great afternoon, and thanks for joining me today.